Hello and welcome to the Institute of National Security Studies, the INSS. I'm Itai Brun and I'm the Deputy for Research and Analysis in the INSS. And we are here in a special program where we will update our strategic assessment for 2020. The original assessment was published earlier this year. And meantime, two dramatic developments have occurred. First, the coronavirus, of course, and then the establishment of a new government in Israel after a political crisis that lasted for more than a year and three rounds of elections. So we're going to move from the international system that is shaken by the virus to the regional system, to the Middle East that perhaps is less shaken, then to the various arenas, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, the Palestinians, and of course, Israel itself. So we will start with the international system. Brigadier General Reserve Asaf Oryon, the head of our China-Israel program. Asaf also leads our international group, and he is the former head of the strategic division in the IDF General Staff. Asaf, three simple questions. First, what would the world look like after the coronavirus or toward a second wave or outbreak? Then what are the implications for Israel and what are your recommendations for the new government? Asaf, go ahead.
Good morning. The top five on the international system would probably be the race to the corona vaccine, both its development, its production, and giving access to it to different nations. The second would be the aftershock of the economic recession. The third is intensifying great power competition, mainly between the US and China. In the US itself, we will probably be seeing polarization because of the November elections. And on the whole, we think we see a disunited world with challenged international institutions. And the only unifying factor might be Israel's intentions for annexation in the West Bank. And these seem to evoke resistance from various factions or actors, including our best friends. This means that Israel will need to keep close contact with whomever develops the corona vaccine, including the US and other places. We need to face both our own economic hardship and the diminishing demand in our main markets. And we need to pay close attention to the great power competition. So our recommendation, again, with the top five, is stay away from this annexation, which will both undermine and destabilize the security situation, but it will probably bring with it economic and political damages. We need to run a deep dialogue with the US, both the government side and the democratic side. And we need to seek, again, a bipartisan support to Israel. We need to discuss Iran, the nuclear challenges, the regional influence, and the proxy warfare. High on the list will be the triangle of relations between Israel, China, and the US. We need to seek a strategic alliance for innovation and technology with the US. Third would be to keep open channels with the international community, which means both Europe, a very important market for Israel. We need to keep an open channel with Russia, which is our military neighbor, and we need to keep close dialogue with China, who is an important trade and economy partner. At the same time, we need to rebalance and recalculate our policy on foreign investment and to offset a bit towards risk management of foreign influence. And my last point would be that under the current circumstance, the world jewelry face unique challenges, and we need to extend our outreach to them, support them, and also encourage Aliyah to Israel. That would be the top five situation points and the top five recommendations for our government.
Thank you, Asaf. And from the international system to the regional system and the Middle East, Dr. Saar Feuer is a research fellow at the INSS and also an associate fellow at the Washington Institute. Sarah, the virus struck a region that was characterized also before the coronavirus with instability and uncertainty. It's an area of wars, identity conflicts, and fundamental problem that were not solved since 2011 and maybe even worsened. So how do you assess the current impact of the coronavirus on the Middle East, and what are your recommendations for the new government?
So I would offer two observations about the impact of the virus on the region so far, and from those observations, maybe three policy recommendations. The first observation is that the human toll of this virus across the region has actually thus far anyway been less acute than what I think many feared was possible, given the population density in certain cities, the pockets of refugees in camps that are scattered throughout the region. These areas seemed pretty ripe for a massive outbreak. Now, if that outbreak has occurred, you know, the data in across the region is spotty and needs to be taken with a hefty grain of salt. But we haven't seen a spike in the number of deaths, which is really the more reliable indicator. And there are theories as to why this is. It might be that actually the more youthful population across the region has made a difference. In some cases, it may be that the security apparatuses of these countries is actually turning out to be useful, shall we say, in handling things like lockdowns. But whatever the reason, the human toll has not been as severe yet. So we haven't seen a collapse of medical systems or of governments more broadly as a result of the virus yet. The second observation is that in contrast to the relatively manageable, and I don't want to be cavalier about the loss of life, of course, but the relatively manageable human toll, in contrast, the economic ramifications have been, I think, stark. And whether you're looking at the oil-producing states in the region that are now dealing with record low oil prices because of this drop in demand due to the virus, or the countries, the non-oil producing countries that have traditionally relied on things like tourism and remittances from wealthy Gulf countries, aid from the West, all of these sources of assistance have now dried up because of developments related to the virus. So the possibility of severe instability arising from these really dire economic conditions, I think, remains very real. And that's a possibility that Israel will need to prepare for. This brings me to the three policy recommendations. The first may sound, and this is what we outlined in our updated assessment, the first may sound a bit obvious, but I think it still is worth spelling out, that the risk of regime destabilization, the collapse of government systems in countries around Israel, means that Israel needs to make necessary preparations on its borders and just be aware of the possibility of spillover of instability. The second and third recommendations have to do with potential opportunities that may have arisen from what is admittedly a very unwelcome development. But the coronavirus may offer the new Israeli government a chance to make some progress in cooperation with the countries with which it has stable formal peace agreements, namely Jordan and Egypt. We should be pursuing things like exchange of medical know-how, perhaps even supplying medical equipment where needed, coordinating arrangements at the border crossings. Relations with Jordan in particular had deteriorated in the last few years, and so I think restoring them with a dialogue at the highest possible level, taking into account Jordanian needs and interests, and pushing for international assistance for Jordan as it tries to weather the corona storm, I think will be worthwhile initiatives. And finally, something about Israel's cooperation with the Gulf states that as up to now, of course, has remained not official, but I think in view of the negative effects of the virus on the Gulf states with whom Israel has formed unofficial relations in recent years, some of those states may now be very distracted with internal challenges and not able to be as involved in countering Iranian influence, for example, across the region. And so this is something that Israel is going to need to prepare for.
Thank you, Sarah. And now to Iran, Sima Shahin is the head of the Iran group in the INSS. She was the head of the research division in the Mossad and held senior positions in both the National Security Council and the Ministry for Strategic Affairs. Sima, Iran is one of the countries that was severely affected by the virus. How do you assess the implication, the effect of the virus concerning Iran's policy, both in the nuclear context and in the regional activity?
Well, thank you, Itai. Iran still possesses the most severe threat to Israel's security with both its nuclear and missile projects, as well as its regional activity. The threat is imminent, as you mentioned, even though Iran is suffering one of its worst situations, resulting of a combination, not just the coronavirus, but also the difficult economic plight caused by the American sanctions, the fall of oil prices, and the failed attempt to get foreign assistance. All this together puts a heavy burden on the Iranian economy and society. But despite all this dire straits, Iran continues its effort to promote its regional and influential, especially, I would mention, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen. And it's building its military, political, as well as economic and social infrastructures in order to make sure that its influence will stay for long periods after the military struggles within these countries will be over. Some of this infrastructure is aimed directly at Israel. At the same time, the conflict between Iran and the United States has escalated and is escalating. One of that is in Iraq, while the Shia militias are attacking American bases in Iraq, in the Gulf Strait, and as well as in the public sphere and in the diplomatic attempt against the sanctions that was using the coronavirus in order to try and get rid of those sanctions. In addition, and what is currently very interesting, is Washington started putting pressure on the Security Council to prolong the embargo against Iran that will expire in October 2020. The U.S. Probably will face a veto from the Russians and might be also from the Chinese, but they are threatening to activate the snapback clause in the JCPOA that brings back sanctions in response for any breaking of the agreement. As everybody knows, Iran has already in the last year started to get out of several important clauses of the agreement. Iran for itself is threatening to take measures in the nuclear sphere, including threatening leaving the NPT. Meanwhile, Iran is continuing to advance its nuclear program. It has already accumulated much more the quantity of low-enriched uranium that is allowed in the agreement. It is operating about 1,000 centrifuges and enrichment site in Fordow that was contrary to its obligations in the agreement. And it is also advancing very much its advanced centrifuge. The main significance of these steps is reduction of the time needed to break out to a nuclear capability should Iran decide to move in this direction. As to recommendation, Israel's new government should formulate a comprehensive long-term strategy for dealing with Iran's regional activity. This strategy should not be based solely on the use of military force. On the nuclear issue, which is the most important for Israel, and that it will likely attract its attention more than any other issue, we are mentioning three things. One is that Israel has to take into account that the Trump administration is getting into the last half year before elections. The question of its attention to this issue is in a question mark. Nonetheless, an effort should be made to reach understanding with the Trump administration about two possible scenarios. One, negotiations for an improved agreement, and two, progress in Iran's nuclear program and shortening of the time for its first device if it happens. At the same time, talks with the leadership of the Democratic Party should be held to promote bipartisan understanding on this matter. The new Israel government, and that's my last point, should also make sure that Israel has a credible military independent option in case Iran decides to break out for a nuclear device. Thank you.
Thank you, Sima. And now we're moving to our northern front, Syria and Lebanon. We'll start with Lebanon. Ona Mizrahi is a senior research fellow at the INSS. She was the deputy of the National Security Advisors of Israel. Ona, how does the coronavirus affect Lebanon and Hezbollah? What are the risks of escalation and how should Israel deal with them?
Okay, thank you. I'll try to answer all these complicated questions by a very brief presentation. And I'll start by saying that the coronavirus crisis met Lebanon during one of its most difficult times in its history. And we are talking about a triple crisis. The first one is the economic crisis that we all know about, and I won't elaborate about it because it's going to be a very long presentation. The second one is the political crisis that we have in Lebanon. In January 20, Hezbollah's camp formed a new government, seemingly in response to the protests that were in the widespread protests in the streets of Lebanon that began in October 19. But this government fails. It fails to provide solutions. It fails to provide, to meet the needs for reforms that are essential for the external aid that Lebanon needs so much. So it seems that the street protests that have continued, except for a very short pause during the coronavirus crisis, during the corona lockdown, I assume that they are going to be renewed in the future, and they are going to be a big problem for the new government that will have to deal with it. The last one, of course, is the public health crisis, the coronavirus. But let me say that despite the low reported numbers of corona infections in Lebanon, the lockdown was the problem. The lockdown worsened the situation in Lebanon, both the economic situation and the political situation, and not the virus itself. Now, about a little bit about Hezbollah, of course, the difficult situation in Lebanon also affected Hezbollah, which is in great distress, and it's not new. Like, of course, its patron, Iran. The organization is subject at the same time to internal pressures and external challenges. But these circumstances, and this is important to say, these circumstances does not change its ideology or motivation to fight Israel. So let me conclude by saying that these efforts continue, but are slower than Hezbollah had hoped. And I think that this is thanks especially to the ongoing Israeli military operations. So, one sentence about the region. Regionally speaking, the Shiite axis is weakened today than it was before. Therefore, Hezbollah, and I think that Sima will agree that also Iran, have no interests in war and most likely seek to avoid military confrontation with Israel, at least in the near future. At the same time, the risk of unplanned escalation still exists. And it's important to emphasize that Israel has to address the serious scenario of future multi-front war that I was talking about before. And I must say that although we have lots of challenges in the north, I still think that the current situation creates more opportunities that risks for Israel, not only on the political level, also in the military level as well. A few recommendations for the new government. I think that first we have to keep the military pressure on Hezbollah and Iran in Syria, and at the same time, to continue to exert the political and economic pressure on Hezbollah. A very important recommendation is about considering the contingency of preemptive attack against Hezbollah, taking into account its progress on the precision project alongside the risk of sparking a large-scale confrontation. We also have to prepare the IDF and the civilian front, and I suppose that Meir is going to talk about it also, to the extreme scenario of the next war in the north, that, as I said before, is going to be a multi-front war. So the new government should allocate resources to this. That's for now.
Thank you, Ona. Dr. Carmit Valenci is the manager of our Syria program, and she's also the editor of the Strategic Assessment periodical journal of the INSS. Carmit, how does the coronavirus affect Syria, and what are the recommendations for the new government?
Thank you, Itai. The coronavirus has not changed dramatically the nature of the challenges facing Israel in Syria. However, we cannot ignore the possible future implications of this crisis on some of the developments there. I will start with the status of the regime. Syria is still far from functioning as a unified state. President Bashar al-Assad remains in power, but is entirely dependent on Iran and Russia, and also faces multiple challenges that are accelerated, among other things, by the coronavirus. The economic situation is deteriorating, including the ability to provide basic needs and services to the Syrian people, the absence of a functioning healthcare system after 9 years of fighting, and the severe shortage of medical resources and equipment. And of course, it has a limited ability to cope with this current crisis. Assad still encounters challenges relating to governance and control, including in southern Syria and, of course, the area of Idlib in the north, which remains the rebels' less stronghold. The conflict with Turkey is also a major obstacle that Assad needs to deal with. Regarding the Iranian role in Syria, despite the high price that Tehran has paid due to the coronavirus and the burden of the economic constraints, its consolidation in Syria is still continuing. It's important to emphasize, however, that this has been done in a more moderate and slower pace than Tehran envisioned and planned. Israel continues operations against consolidation by Iran, and Hezbollah has disrupted and delayed the entrenchment, but will probably be unable to eliminate it. And this leads me to the final point, the implications for Israel. The main challenge in Syria remains the activity of the radical Shiite axis, including Iran's multidimensional consolidation, the activity of the Shiite militias and mainly Hezbollah's strongholds in the Golan Heights. So our assessment is that the challenges will not disappear, but will likely not develop into a large-scale war because all of the actors are currently focused on dealing with either the coronavirus crisis or other internal challenges and have no interest in war. At the same time, we still need to take into account the risk of an unplanned escalation, which may unfold on several fronts at once. Lebanon, of course, Syria, and perhaps even Iraq. Israel should prepare to this scenario. In any case, Israel should continue using force against Iran efforts to entrench itself in Syria, apart from continuing Israel's close relations and coordination with both Russia and the United States. We also recommend to rethink about the remaining of Bashar al-Assad in power. Assad is clearly unable to remove Iranian presence from Syria, and he holds the responsibility for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of civilians. In light of Russia's recent criticism toward Assad, such a measure can be feasible perhaps through Russian-American, even Turkish initiative backed by the European countries to replace him, and finally put Syria on the road to political reforms that will result in international aid for reconstruction of this poor state. Thank you.
And from the Northern arena to the Palestinian arena, Brigadier General Reserve Udi Dekel is the managing director of the INSS. Udi, the Palestinian arena presents two main challenges, the issue of annexation and the possibility of kind of a deal or ceasefire with Hamas. So what are the recommendations for the Israeli government on these two issues?
Thank you, Itai. I would like to mention four main trends in the Palestinian arena, which create a lot of challenges for Israel. The first one is the what we call separation and differentiation between the PA in the West Bank and the Hamas in Gaza. And I can say that even during the corona crisis, they didn't find the way to bridge the gaps between them to create unity government or any kind of way to working together. I'm not mentioning even the reconciliation. So this is an issue that we have to deal with along our activity with the Palestinian side. The second aspect, which is important, and this is an important factor, that was the way of responding by the PA and the Hamas, also in Gaza, to the coronavirus crisis. And I can say that it was a basically effective response by them. And it created a lot of ability of cooperation with Israel, yes, with Israel, because they depended on Israel support in that case. And I would like to say that they were responsible and accountable in their activity. And even the public, the Palestinian public, changed their mind about those two leaderships by the ability to control any kind of crisis in the Palestinian side. The third aspect, which we have to take into consideration, and this is one of the outcome of the coronavirus, the third aspect, which is important in any case, this is the economic crisis in the Palestinian side, which now I don't see any way that they can recover from the economic crisis without assistance, support, and help from Israel and other countries all over the world, and nobody have now time, attention, attempt to help the others. So this is another issue that we have to take into consideration as one of the things that will have a lot of influence upon our activity. But the last one, which is the most important one, this is the issue of application of the Israeli sovereignty in some of the areas in the West Bank. Application of sovereignty is nice word for annexation or applying the law. This is the same meaning, especially when we speak about international law. And this is a game changer. What is the meaning of game changer? Because it's going to change dramatically the picture on the ground and the trends between us and the Palestinians and our strategic environment. And when you do something like that, a strategic change, or what we call changing the rule of the game, you have to consider what will be the positive or negative consequences to your activity. And when I check about what can be the consequences for our applying the sovereignty in some of the areas of the West Bank, it's very difficult to find something positive as outcome of it. Because as we see now, even today, that already there is a transmission in the Israeli-Palestinian security cooperation. And when you check all the trends and the possible scenarios, you can see negative scenarios because you cannot see any positive outcome from that activity. Because it will not improve our economic situation, it will not improve our security situation. Nobody is going to recognize Israel's sovereignty in that area, other than, of course, Trump administration, that I don't know what will be the next administration in the U.S. And also there is another issue which the international community will not recognize Israeli sovereignty, but will support Palestinian sovereignty all over the West Bank on 67 line. So when you do this kind of activity as annexation, as changing the rules of the game, you would like to see any kind of strategic advantage which outcome from that activity. And I don't see any strategic advantage which will come from that activity. So our recommendation to the government is not to rush. Even the feeling that there is opportunity today because Trump is still in the White House and the world is focusing upon, engaging with the corona crisis and maybe the Palestinian share is decline and other meaning which give many feeling of opportunity in that time to do something. Because we believe that, first of all, we have to try and to still check the ability to promote political process between us and the Palestinian Authority. The Palestinian Authority is the only entity and actor in the Palestinian side which we can negotiate for the future. They supporting the negotiation path and not the resistance path as the Hamas. So we have to try to negotiate with them. If not, we would not support the idea of mixing population and people as the annexation steps. Our institute did the big research about 12 opportunities in the Palestinian side. And we found that the most important way now to go forward is in the direction of separation, not mixing between population, separation between population. And this is the main goal that we have to lead. So our recommendation to our government to go to that direction, another direction of annexation in that stage. So the main idea is to take the corona crisis as a positive thing because we saw that we can work together, Israel and the PA, basically, and also even with Hamas, and not try now to block the way of kind of cooperation and engaging better situation by putting on the table the issue of annexation, which will create only negative implications to Israel. Thank you.
Thank you, Udi. And from the Palestinian arena into Israel's internal arena, Brigadier General Reserve Dr. Meir Elran is a senior research fellow at the INSS and the head of our Israeli group. Meir, the virus has created a multidimensional crisis in Israel, economic, public health, social. How should Israel get out of this crisis, Meir?
Thank you very much, Itai. As you suggested, Israel is indeed still facing not only the coronavirus pandemic, but consequently a dramatic and still unknown economic and social crisis. This is liable to have harsh bearings on the domestic scene, as the new government is still trying to struggle with the ramifications of a prolonged political crisis. So I would like to suggest that widening of socioeconomic gaps, aggravation of social rifts, harsh sentiments of disputation, both on political and personal issues, might seriously challenge the national resilience of the state of Israel in the coming years. Hence, we would like to suggest a distinct civilian national agenda that is needed in the coming years, which of course should also shape the national budget. Issues of health, employment, welfare, and education should be the main anchors of national priority. Two main, perhaps conflicting social and economic thrusts are calling for A, giving priority to engines of growth, and B, to helping disadvantaged groups and also the middle class who have suffered most in the corona dramatic slowdown and probably beyond. At the same time, a new multi-year plan for the IDF should be agreed upon based on the new adaptation to the new priorities and budgetary constraints, as I have mentioned beforehand. An immediate need is to address the continued management of the corona crisis, which is still unfortunately with us. In this respect, public trust in the government, social solidarity, and public compliance with the necessary restrictive rules will all affect the capacity and pace of Israel's emergence from the crisis. Israel's systemic capacity to manage the COVID crisis should be now reshaped to be better prepared for new outbreaks. But furthermore, this is very important for us, the pandemic also exposed the urgent need for a robust national crisis management system for the home front to deal with different kinds of security and also civilian disruptions that will come in face of us. And lastly, I would like to say something about opportunities. The corona crisis have exposed a very interesting and I would like to say new picture in terms of the Arab relations with the Jews in Israel and also the relations within the Israeli society, mostly with the ultra-Orthodox sectors and the non-religious populations. These new manifestations of solidarity, trust, and closeness are very important to us, and I think that they need to be enhanced, they need to be strengthened for the sake of the population at large, especially in the challenging years ahead of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you all. You can find the written version of our updated strategic assessment on the INSS website.